They talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, but in La Liga it is the five horsemen of the title race. Yes, after a weekend of dropped points and controversies and basically everything that we've come to expect the Spanish top flight, it is five teams that have emerged just before the Christmas break as the title race contenders. Welcome to Eye on La Liga, the official English language podcast of Spain's biggest newspaper. And once again, I am Mark Mayer, your host, joined with this week. He was here last week. He's back again. It's Ewan McTeer. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very good. You can't get rid of me. I'm here again to talk about some La Liga football.
You're just going to shoehorn some Atletico in. I know it. And Jason Pettigrove is also back on the podcast this week, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
That's an absolute pleasure. So we'll crack on then. And it was Saturday with the main action on La Liga this time out. Barcelona drawing 2-2 at home with Celta Vigo, and then Real Madrid failing to capitalise that on the evening game at San Mamés, drawing 0-0 with Athletic Club. And I want to talk about the first thing off is, it was some weeks ago now that Cristiano Ronaldo said that Real Madrid, of their squad this year, has just been impacted so much by the sales they made in the summer, and the squad that they've had this year is much younger. Ronaldo saying it's much more inexperienced. And I think this weekend really showed that, because an experienced side that knew everything about it's going to do would go out there and beat Athletic Club. They'll find a way to do it. They just couldn't manage it. And I just think, Ewan, it's this squad at Real Madrid, we've talked about it over the last few years as being, you know, the best squad in world football. We've now seen that it's actually not quite up to as much as we thought it was.
Yeah, I think in the summer everybody was raving about the young signings they made, and maybe we were sort of blinded to the importance of players such as Alvaro Morata, James Rodriguez, Danilo, these players who left in the summer, and especially in the striking department. I mean, Zidane has explicitly said that what Real Madrid are lacking is goal scoring, and to let Alvaro Morata leave and Mariano Diaz leave as well, both of them are on double figures already this season at their new clubs at Chelsea and at Lyon. And yeah, Real Madrid, boy, could they use one of them right now to have on the bench rather than their only really alternative being Borja Mayoral.
Yeah, Borja Mayoral has three career top flight goals. And Jason, you compare that to the quality that Barcelona have at the moment. Gerard Deulofeu is the kind of outside man at Barcelona, wasn't even included in the squad against Celta Vigo. And he's, you know, his top flight record with a number of different teams in a number of different countries is far more impressive. Is this, looking at Real Madrid, is this a case of just looking at that squad and saying, is that all you've got? Is that actually enough to go ahead and win not just La Liga, but a number of titles across a number of competitions?
I think it's a mixture of things, to be honest, Mark. As you rightly said, the fact that they let Morata go, they let Mariano go, they didn't get in Mbappe, which, as we were led to believe at Marker in English at the time, it was virtually a done deal. And then, you know, the issues with Mbappe wanting guaranteed time, which of course you would do, as any player would do, especially if you're a player in his position, one of the hottest properties in Europe. I think you look at that first of all, that's mistake number one. You then look at the fact that they've just been on this run that, quite honestly, no one can believe, that, you know, the way they outplayed Barcelona in the Super Cups. And then, you know, really ever since La Liga started, they've not looked anything like the team they were of last season. Even, you know, when they've been winning, they haven't been winning particularly well. They haven't looked like we would expect. And I just think, you know, you look at the bench and you think, OK, yeah, you know, Kovacic, Mayoral, Vasquez, Ceballos, Teo Hernandez, they're not massive names, but the other issue is obviously is the rotation. You've got to allow these players to come in and build their confidence. Zidane's way of thinking, you know, BBC is untouchable. Somewhere along the line, that's got to give. I don't care if you're Cristiano Ronaldo or Karim Benzema. If you've only scored four goals in 14 La Liga games, then you need to be on the bench and someone else needs to come in. And it's almost like the situation that Barcelona had with MSN. You know, for all intents and purposes, they were undroppable as well. But, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it. Either you play these guys and hope, as Zidane is hoping, that they're going to come good eventually, but by then it may well be too late. Or you give your bench a chance. Yes, they're young and inexperienced, but the only way they're going to get that experience is if Zidane puts them in there.
Ceballos is the interesting one to sort of think about there. I mean, Kovacic's been injured, Boya Mayoral, as we say about his record. But Ceballos had a, you know, just a really good season last year, a really good summer as well with the under-21s. And he, perhaps more than anyone, has been the one who's not been given that consistent run of games. He's not been given a two or three even run of games to say, go and show us what you can do. And he has actually sort of produced when he has come on. So I'm interested to see if Ceballos is going to be the one who steps up now, if Kovacic, back from injury, is going to be the one that Zidane decides that he trusts just to add a little bit of something else. But I mean, we've spoken at Marca over the summer and since the season started how the midfield is completely packed there in terms of the squad. Let's move to the defence then. It was a clean sheet at Athletic Club, nothing to be sniffed at. However, there is one man who always manages to find himself in the headlines, and it's, well, he's the master man now, isn't he? Sergio Ramos. His 19th red card, which is just a staggering amount of red cards. How can a player who gets sent off so much be still considered to be one of the best players in the world?
Well, I think, you know, he's the sort of player that supporters in particular warm to. He's a real, you know, I hate to use the phrase, but I'm going to have to use it here. It's the sort of sweat on your shirt kind of captain. He's a warrior. He's 100% every time. He never gives up. He never goes missing in games. Okay, yes, it means he's got this absolutely incredible amount of red cards. But I think if you asked any football manager, and indeed any football fan, if you could have Sergio Ramos in your team, would you have him there? And I think unequivocally, the answer would be yes. Even Barcelona supporters, and I've had conversations with a lot of them, and we've sort of said, you know, pick one player from Real Madrid that you quite happily have at Barcelona. And the answer every single time, without any hesitation at all, was Sergio Ramos. He just got something. And, you know, everybody seems to love him despite his record.
I would say, Ewan, that having a Sergio Ramos in the team is very good, but I'd probably only want one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you had two, then you've got no centre-backs left, really. So, yeah, it's so interesting looking at his record. And when you look at the red cards he's earned in his career and not just in La Liga, it's only seven of them have been straight reds. He tends to get two yellows, and I think that just adds to what Jason was saying. He's the kind of captain who puts himself about, and it's kind of inevitable that he gets so many bookings because he's always involved. He's always where the ball is. He's always making a tackle, and sometimes he's a little bit late. Sometimes he's too aggressive, but he always just puts himself about. And very few of Ramos's red cards I can remember for being a really terrible crunching tackle or anything like that. I think most of them tend to be ones where he's on a warning and he still just puts himself in there for that sort of 50-50 challenge, knowing that if he gets a second yellow, he's off. And a lot of them as well actually tend to come towards the end of games and maybe aren't quite as significant as they could have been, like it was this weekend where I think it was 86 minute when he got sent off. And as much as that sort of stalled Real Madrid's push for the 3 points, it didn't leave them a man down for half an hour or a full half or anything like that.
I do wonder as well, so I'm just going to jump in. I do wonder if his reputation precedes him as well, like a lot of sort of players, you know, they have that reputation of going in hard. I tend to agree with you, Ewan. There's probably one or two tackles that I can remember where they were certainly red card offences, but most of them are 50-50 balls, slightly mistimed, arguably sometimes not even a booking, but because it's Sergio Ramos, he'll get the yellow, and if he's already on a yellow, then off he goes. So I don't think you'll ever change him, and I don't think really we want him to change, do we?
Well, no, I think you talk about a player who wears their heart on the sleeves. I don't think you can't have too many of those players these days. Certainly there's an idea of a culture of a player who maybe doesn't care about the badge and the shirt as much these days. That's certainly something you can't accuse Ramos of. But we'll move on then a little bit, because the 200 million euro treasure trove, as we've described it on Marca, is going to be coming up in the January transfer window for Real Madrid to improve upon. I don't think they're going to be targeting the defence too much, but perhaps it's going to be a goalkeeper with Kepa Arrizabalaga and perhaps a striker as well, Mauro Icardi, being touted around, although Inter have claimed there's no contact from Real Madrid as of yet. And on Marca, Hugo Chiesa said that it was clear at San Mamés that the side need a striker, a number nine, who can provide the goals that Alvaro Morata did before they even think about strengthening between the posts and providing competition for Keylor Navas. I think we'll do a good in-depth transfer preview podcast just before Christmas. But Ewan, at the moment, is Real Madrid's transfer policy something that you would say you have faith in? is it going in the right direction, the sort of players they're being linked with?
Yeah, I really like, and first of all, very nice pronunciation of Kepa's surname. I won't even try myself to pronounce that.
But, I've learned to spell it now. That's the most important part. I know it's two R's and everything else is as you'd expect.
What I've really liked about Real Madrid's policy last few years is the way they're going for young players, and they're trying to get the Galacticos of 2027 in 2017, making a move for the likes of Marco Asensio a few years ago, and then paying €45 million for Vinicius Junior in Brazil. But again, by all accounts, he's going to live up to that price tag. And that's all very well. Even Ceballos, as we talked about, or some of the other players, Fael Hernandez, they brought in. These are guys for the future. That's great. But you also need some players for the here and now. And Real Madrid haven't really spent too much money in the past couple of seasons on ready-made players, ready to slot into the team, into the starting 11 straight away. They've instead spent money on maybe fringe players for the squad or on young players. And yeah, maybe it's time that they sort of pulled the trigger and spent, some... a significant amount of that 200 million treasure chest on a player who can come in and give them something for the 2017-18 season, because otherwise it's going to end up passing them by.
Later on in the podcast, we'll be doing a little feature on how Real Madrid's 2011-2012 team blew away La Liga, certainly in a way that the current team isn't doing it. And we'll move on to Barcelona, because it was a 2-2 draw at home to Celta Vigo on Saturday afternoon, which sort of opened up the gap that Real Madrid failed to step into. Jason, would you say this was a one-off?
I think it's hard to say just at this moment. I don't think they're going to suffer too badly with Samuel Umtiti's absence. I know a lot of people are coming down heavily on Thomas Vermaelen, but I think in general terms, whenever he's played, he hasn't done that badly. There's other options. Valverde could go for three at the back and just have Alba, Piqué and probably Roberto. He may even bring Busquets back there. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen. But I think even on Saturday, I think actually they were good value for the win. It was a couple of glaring sort of errors in terms of letting people in round the back. But when you look at it, they hit the woodwork twice, Barcelona. I think that's the 18th and 19th times they've done that this season. They had two or three gilt-edged chances that they missed. And OK, it was a well-won point for Celta, but I can't be too hard on Barcelona after that performance. And let's be honest, even before they go into the game against Sporting, that's 19 games unbeaten now. How on earth can you possibly, I hear people moaning that Valverde, again, isn't the right choice. I think that's ridiculous. I think all of the problems that he's had, he's come up with solutions thus far. There was always going to be a period within the season, and maybe more than one, where every team's going to suffer just a little bit. And, we have to give Valverde the benefit of the doubt that he's going to pick the right players and the right systems for them to sort of see out, if it's going to be a wobble, see that out and then move sort of into the second half of the season where they are at the moment, which is top, and by 5 points.
Valverde blaming injuries on the drop points with Samuel Umtiti. 2 months out, I think it's meant to be for Samuel Umtiti now. And to be honest, I actually felt like Thomas Vermaelen, certainly against Valencia, did have a decent game, showed his experience and his calm. But Ewan, there's one theme that emerged from this draw against Celta Vigo, and that's that Celta Vigo are a bit of the Barcelona bogey team at the moment, aren't they? They've scored 10 goals past Marc-Andre ter Stegen in the German's time at the club, and Iago Aspas has helped himself to 4 goals in that time period. Why is it Celta Vigo that are getting the best of Barcelona, or the worst of Barcelona at the moment?
Yeah, Celta Vigo are such an interesting team because, they really have it in them to defeat Barcelona. But at the same time, the last two trips they had to the Camp Nou were a 6-1 and a 5-0. So I think if this is the kind of game you're looking at in your betting slip, this is the one where you just avoid every time, because you never know which Barcelona and which Celta Vigo are going to turn up. And I think the reason for that is that Celta Vigo have that sort of same attacking intent to them. And, teams that really go at Barcelona, sometimes it pays off and you get a 4-3 win as they did last season. And sometimes it really doesn't and you get absolutely thrashed. So Celta Vigo are always fun to watch when they take on Barcelona, because they never just sit back and hope for a 0-0. They always go for it. And even at the weekend there, they normally play 3 up top. OK, they only played 2 really up top, that one with Aspas and Maxi Gomez. But still, to play 2 up top at the Camp Nou is far more adventurous than most teams go for. So I think, you know, they take it to Barcelona and sometimes it pays off, so credit to them.
Mention now Real Madrid at home to Sevilla at 4:15 Spanish time on Saturday, December 9th. Then the Sunday Premier kickoff in the evening, Villarreal hosting Barcelona. Jason, would you be happy with a point out of that in terms of Barcelona, their title race, or is this one, you know, just a win, it's always a win, and that sort of mantra?
I think football generally, you want to win your home games and try and stay unbeaten in your away games. So I think before the game, Barcelona would take a point, but they'll certainly be going for the 3 points. I think if you look at Sevilla against Real Madrid, I think Real are missing Casemiro, Dani Carvajal and Ramos, which is obviously going to affect them. Sevilla are sort of blown a bit hot and cold this season. When they're good, they're very good. And when they're bad, they're just absolutely horrific. So we'll see which Sevilla turns up in that game. Look, you know, I think it's really complacency now that's going to stop Barcelona from sort of moving on from where they are at the moment. Fortunately for them, Valencia lost, because Valencia could have been just 2 points behind them at the close of play this weekend. Again, I think Valverde will assess the situation. He'll look at, you know, what the opposition are. He's shown tactically that he's willing to change system. I think it was a 4-1-2-1-2 that he played the weekend just gone. So, you know, let's see. I think certainly Barcelona have got the tools to do the job, if I can put it like that. Whether we'll see another performance that Villarreal had last year, albeit I think with the help of the referee, we'll find out. But if you were going to ask me who to put my money on, I'd say Barcelona will probably take this one, but by a very narrow one goal.
On the topic of agenda in our alternative focus section, which will just be coming up in a few seconds' time, last week we did the Copa del Rey and spoke about that. Each week we're just going to kind of look into a little bit of Spanish football that perhaps we don't usually cover so much. And this time, well, it's the title race. So I guess it is something we cover quite a lot, but that's just because there's so many teams in it at the moment. So we'll be onto that in just a few moments' time. While it was Saturday that was certainly the most interesting in terms of the quantity of games going on, the quality of the Sunday match between Getafe and Valencia has been a bit of a subject of debate in the last few hours and days and whatnot, with the Getafe pitch once again coming under scrutiny. But it was the 10-man Madrid team that managed to pull out the points and get the 1-0 win over Valencia, their first defeat of the season. And I mean, Ewan, I'm not as someone who's on looking at Valencia here rather than a fan, I'm not too worried for them with this defeat. They're always going to lose at some point, and it's really about how they respond that matters now, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago and sort of saying what happens if they lose that game to Barcelona. Well, they didn't. They managed to draw, but they've lost the very next week. And now, does it completely crumble, or do they sort of just brush this one aside and keep ploughing on as maybe Atletico Madrid did when they were surprise title candidates in 2013-14. So the problem for them, I think, is the fact that Zaza's knee, you have to worry about that. You have to worry about losing Gonzalo Guedes as well. I mean, some of their best players of the start of the season are carrying a couple of injuries, and they had probably one of the best, very, very best starting 11s in all of Europe. But in terms of their squad depth, how is their bench? And we'll see that out in the next couple of weeks, because they're going to have to rotate a little bit, and they're going to have to replace some of these injured players. So I'm not too worried for them. I mean, Getafe is a very difficult place to go. I think we need to say that. I mean, they've won all their home games except the ones against Barcelona, Real Madrid and Sevilla, and all of those ones they only lost by one goal. In each occasion, the winner scored in the last 10 minutes. So I think Getafe away, it's historically maybe not sounded like a very tough fixture, but I think this season, Getafe at home with, as you mentioned, that pitch, they're certainly a difficult prospect for any team.
I was going to say, Madrid doing super well at the moment, Jason, with Leganes and Getafe also in the top eight. But when it comes to Valencia, what would you say about them? Would you say that they're a team of Celta Vigo and Eibar up next? Is it the fact there's pressure on them now? They're not under the radar anymore?
I don't think so. I was just going to sort of throw my two pennies and say, if you look at how Getafe played against them, I think we've not seen a team play against them like that this season. I mean, Valencia have been allowed to sort of play their own game, dictate, whereas Getafe, I mean, I think it was 8 yellow cards they had plus the red. So that tells you all you need to know about, you know, sort of how up for the game they were. They weren't shirking any of the dirty work, so to speak. And I think maybe looking forward, that's what Marcelino needs to be aware of, is that, you know, not every team is going to allow his side to spray the ball out to the channels, you know, break at pace as they did so well against Barcelona. They're going to be teams that are going to not necessarily stick players behind the ball, but they're going to defend as a unit, and they're going to, you know, move forward physically as a unit as well. And I think, yeah, that's probably what knocked them out of their stride this weekend. I still think they'll be there or thereabouts in a couple of months, unless injuries hit hard. And as Ewan said, you know, we then look at the strength of their bench. There's a possibility that, you know, they might sort of get knocked out of the sort of top two or three positions. Yeah, I don't see it. The way they've been playing so far, it's been fabulous to watch. They've been probably the best team to watch in the league, in all fairness. So, yeah, like I've said with Barcelona, let's see what happens the next couple of games. I hope we've got two or maybe three games until the Christmas break, and then we go again after then.
Interestingly enough, the team that sort of has, you know, they're only 6 points off Barcelona, 1 point behind Valencia on 30 points at the moment in third place, so Atletico Madrid. And I sense that this win over Real Sociedad they got on Saturday afternoon, it kind of had every component you needed for a, you know, a potential title winning team. Yes, they had the moment of going behind and the penalty conceded and all the... It turned out in the end it was a miss of the season from Angel Correa as the chances they get back into the game. But an 88th minute winner at home against a tough opponent, that's always going to send the fans home happy and really just reinstill the fact that they are still around in this race. They do have the joint best defensive record in La Liga. Atletico Madrid still very much in this title race, aren't they?
Well, I would ask you which Angel Correa miss you're talking about, because there were three glaring misses. I think you're referring to one at the start of the second half when he had basically the open goal. But,
and it went about three goal lengths over the goal as well.
That was the one. I think the ball is about to land nearby me anytime soon. That was a really, I think, important win for Atletico Madrid in terms of almost christening the Wanda with a big comeback victory. They've not had that yet, and the wins that they have had there have been sort of comfortable ones. And they've obviously drawn a lot of games and lost to Chelsea there as well. So I think for Atletico Madrid to sort of really grind in and get a win in a game that, with about half an hour to go, you really didn't think it was going to be their day. I mean, Geronimo really was having one of the games of the season in goal, fought in everything that was coming his way. Atletico Madrid conceding a penalty, letting a goal in. It just didn't seem like it was going to be their afternoon, and for them to be able to pull one back with Felipe Luis and then get that very, very late winner as well from Antoine Griezmann, that was like you mentioned, that's the kind of wins that title challenges are made of. And I think it's the kind of win that they'd really needed to sort of start making their home stadium a bit of a fortress. And like you say, the fans went home happy, and next time they turn up at the Wanda, they're going to expect something similar. So yeah, Atletico Madrid still unbeaten, still in the title race ahead of Real Madrid. And it was a perfect weekend for them with Barcelona, Valencia and Real Madrid all dropping points and then picking up a very, very hard-fought win.
I was going to ask you a quick question, actually, Ewan, because obviously you've been to the Wanda a couple of times now. Do you sense there's been a shift in terms of the crowd? Because I know the players had said sort of at the very beginning that they felt like that they were playing a neutral ground. You know, when they were at the Vicente Calderon, the crowd was almost the 12th man. And Simeone has never backed down from the belief that his side are going to be one of the sides to challenge Barcelona. You can see that with the team. You know, they've not given up. But I just wonder as well, is the crowd with them now? Do they genuinely believe that, you know, Simeone is still the man to sort of push them forward and to, you know, get them on the coattails of Barca?
Yeah, I think all the fans are still with them. They all fully believe in the Simeone project. I think the problem with the first few games at the new stadium was you had the ultras behind the south goal and they do their part, but the rest of the stadium, it was all the kind of the groups that form over decades at the Calderon, they were all completely displaced. And at the Calderon, the whole of the south stand was always very atmospheric. The whole of the south stand was always singing in unison. And you didn't really have that now, because maybe some of the older season ticket holders who were in the south stand who might join in if the rest of the stand was, they've been displaced to maybe the west, the north, wherever. And as much as you've got the ultras and they're, you know, trying their best to drum up some atmosphere, the rest of the stadium still quite hasn't worked out exactly what the fans sitting around them are all about, and it's hard to generate atmosphere in other parts of the stadium. And I think it was telling that there wasn't a tifo for the Madrid derby, the first time that's happened in decades. And it's going to take a bit of time to just for everybody to sort of work out how the stadium works and what kind of areas of the stadium are singing areas and which ones are maybe going to be quieter. But yeah, matches like this, when there's a goal in the 87th minute, you know, the whole ground is going to erupt in noise, and that can only be a positive for Atletico Madrid.
Betis, Alaves and Espanyol to see off the calendar year, and I really think that's pretty much as good a fixture list as you can get at the moment. Real Betis have really dropped off, and Alaves, Espanyol haven't quite got going yet this season. We'll round off this chat then with a little word on Sevilla. They're fifth at the moment on 28 points, the same as Real Madrid, and then behind them they've got a big 7-point gap down to Villarreal. So looking forward, I just get the sense with Sevilla that if they are going to become title contenders, it is just that old factor of goals. If they can't, they've got 19 goals from 14 games at the moment. That level of goal scoring is just not going to be enough to see you through as they had last season. It's not enough for a 38-game season to really make an impact at the top of the league.
It's unusual for a Barito side as well, isn't it? Because we're used to, when he was at Celta, we were used to them sort of free-flowing and scoring well. And that really hasn't happened. And, you know, we've speculated whether his illness might play a part in their form. But, I mean, I'm just looking now and they've only lost one, I think, in their last eight or nine games. So, you know, they're not doing too badly. And as you said, you know, they're level with Real at the moment. I think it's going to be consistency. I think if they can maintain the consistency they've had over that last sort of half dozen, eight or so games, in the next six or eight games, then they give themselves every chance. But you know, they have got a few hard games coming up. They've got Real Madrid, as we know. They're away at Real Sociedad. Levante won't be an easy game for them. And then there's one or two others thrown in, you know, away at Eibar. You know, they found their form again, as Ewan will be happy to say. I think it's three wins on the spin now.
That's very correct.
So, look, they've got every chance, but they need to maintain some sort of form and score goals, as you said, Mark. They had the chance last year, and you know, they at the end of the season they sort of fell away. And I'd hate to think that will happen again, but you know, to be honest, I think it might. They've got teams that if they were to lose at the weekend, if Villarreal were to beat Barca, then you know there's only a few points between them and Sevilla. Leganes are obviously up there, even Getafe and Real Sociedad. They're not really that far behind in the grand scheme of things. So I think the next half dozen games is going to be crucial for them.
Yes, well, we'll have to see how Sevilla get on as they go to Real Madrid next Saturday. Obviously, the podcast will be back after that to discuss the big weekend action. Some other games that maybe of interest to you, as we mentioned a minute ago, Valencia hosting Celta Vigo, the Premier game on the Saturday. Levante Atletico Bilbao on Sunday evening will be an interesting one. Levante, decent side at home, but they've perhaps let their form drop a little bit in the last few weeks, with Cuco Ziganda at Athletic really under the cosh, and Las Palmas at Alaves on Friday night as a big relegation six-pointer. We've lost Amarillo's back to winning ways now that Paco Ayestarán has packed his bags and left the club. We'll move on then to the final section of the show, which is just how the Real Madrid team of 2011-12, it's going to be a nice feature where we go through perhaps a different team or a different period in La Liga or Spanish football history, just discuss exactly what made that team, how they'd fit in today, and we'll be doing that next up with Real Madrid 2011-2012. So let me throw you some stats at you then for this team. Real Madrid in 2011-12 had 32 wins, 100 points and 121 goals. They were top from week 10 to the end of the season, and they scored four or more goals 12 times at home and further six times away from home. In comparing that period of Spanish football to this period, what I would say, Jason, is that there was a real fear factor then in La Liga de los Records, as it's kind of come to be known that season. I don't think that fear factor is around today. And do you, would you agree with that? And why would you think that is?
I do agree with it. I just think they hit the ground running from the very beginning. I mean, they won all of their pre-season friendlies, and most of them, again, by scoring, you know, quite big numbers of goals. They were then beaten in the Supercopa de España by Barcelona. But then after that, you know, I think their opening game was a 6-0 victory over Zaragoza, then a 4-2 win over Getafe. They didn't win then for two, but then went on a 10-game run before losing to Barca, and then another 11-game winning run. And they didn't actually then lose till the end of the season. I think the players they had were almost at their peak at that time. We had, obviously, Ronaldo there. Kaká was still there. Benzema, Ozil was playing very, very well at that point. And you also had players in there, you know, like Sami Khedira, Ricardo Carvalho, you know, people like Ramos does now that sort of put their foot in. They had a really good mix of ball players and generals, if I can put it like that. And, you know, Mourinho had a point to prove as well. And I think it just all came together. I mean, looking at the players they brought in, they weren't particularly big names. I mean, I think, you know, Fabio Contrao and Jose Callejon were probably the biggest names. Rafael Varane came in at that time. The only other players I think they had in was Royston Drenthe, Nuri Sahin, I think, Hamid Altıntop. So, I mean, they weren't, you know, they certainly weren't successful players as such. And, yeah, you compare it to now, probably the squad now is probably better, but it doesn't have the fear factor that one did.
Yeah, I do agree that they were very much settled and Mourinho had his feet under the table. Ewan, how much do you think that side's success was down to being wound up by Barcelona and Pep Guardiola in the number of years before that?
Yeah, I think that was the sort of narrative at the time was, you know, can Pep be stopped? And looking back, maybe we sort of place a bit too much emphasis on that because, you know, sure, Mourinho came in and they wanted to beat Pep Guardiola's Barcelona and they did it. But when you think about each game Real Madrid went into, you know, Real Madrid against, you know, like that Zaragoza game Jason mentions, I mean, I really doubt that they go into that game and I doubt that Pep Guardiola's name would be mentioned in the pre-match team talk. I think Real Madrid just were able to just round off wins against all the teams that they should beat. I mean, we mentioned there how they lost to Barcelona, but the games that they should have won, they did win. And I think that's how they all came together to win this league. I don't think each individual match was about doing better than Barcelona. I think it was just, it had been too long since they'd won a league title and it was, you know, let's just get our heads down, beat who's in front of us and score lots of goals in the process. And, you know, as Jason mentioned there, you know, to have some of their best players in peak form for that season was very important. And they probably wish they could have that number of goals now. I mean, that season you had Ronaldo, Higuain and Benzema all on 20 plus goals just in La Liga. And I mean, if Real Madrid could have anything close to that now, they'd be flying. So, yeah, this was just a team that scored lots of goals, almost bullied the smaller teams in La Liga and didn't really drop points when they weren't supposed to.
I think you have to give credit to Mourinho as well, because quite often, you know, even now, he's sort of been called like a manager that tends to park the bus and is overly defensive. That season particularly, I mean, even now at Man United this season, he's doing it as well, but it sort of put that to bed. You know, the record goals in the Liga, which still stands to this day, you know, 7-1 against Osasuna, 6-2 away at Sevilla, 4-1 at home to Athletic Club, 5-1 at home to Granada, 6-2 against Rayo. I mean, every game, they were just going to town. And, you know, nobody really could stop them. It was a fantastic season. And if managers are the ones that have to sort of carry the can when teams aren't doing so well, then I'm afraid, you know, Mourinho has to be, you know, given the credit for taking them through that season.
Looking across La Liga that season, would you say, as a season that Villarreal got relegated, so perhaps a season that had more quality in looking back on it with that sort of hindsight, but, I mean, Barcelona were in decent form. They got 91 points themselves. Messi, perhaps his best ever year in terms of pure individual output. Is the quality of La Liga, would you say it's grown and more competitive? Perhaps maybe the Real Madrid team of then wouldn't do so well in this La Liga. Is those sort of things the factors that helped that Real Madrid team, as maybe La Liga wasn't as good in that year?
I think that's dead right. And what's maybe as interesting as the fact they got 100 points and beat Barcelona by 9 points is you look at how far ahead Real Madrid were from the champion, from missing out in the Champions League. So ahead of fifth place Atletico Madrid, they were 44 points ahead. Like 44, that's just ridiculous. So they qualified for the Champions League by 44 point margin. That's just something that I don't think you would really see as often just now. I mean, there's so much competition. As we just mentioned, we've got a 5-team title race now, and this was back right in the middle of the days where no team had won it since Valencia at the start of the century. This was very much, if it wasn't Barcelona, it was Real Madrid, and if it wasn't Real Madrid, it was Barcelona. Atletico Madrid have shown that it's now possible for other teams to win it, and maybe if they hadn't won it in 2013-14, we wouldn't be discussing Valencia and Sevilla's chances. But now, I think there's a recognition that it is possible for someone to dethrone these Barcelona and Real Madrid teams, possibly because the current Barcelona and Real Madrid squads maybe aren't as good as they were during the Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho days.
I do wonder as well, just going back to this 2011-12 league, whether, you know, Barcelona didn't do too shabbily either when you think about it. They scored 114 themselves, only let in 29. And I think they had a goal difference of plus 85. So, I mean, you know, perhaps it was them sort of pushing Real Madrid along and, you know, keeping them at that level that potentially helped them to stay there.
One of the things about the Real Madrid team that I sort of worry or wonder if they have any regrets in terms of that season was that they lost on penalties in the semi-final of the Champions League to what was a very good Bayern Munich team, possibly the best ever Bayern Munich team in a number of ways. To round off this discussion then, is there any way would you say that that Real Madrid team could have been even better? Is there something that they perhaps just lacked in terms of, I wouldn't say they're considered among the best ever teams in history, and perhaps that's because of Barcelona, perhaps that's because of certain things like the penalties. Was it a case of maybe Mourinho, he always has that short term sort of feel at a club, he never stays around too long? Were the management at the club not quite able to continue that success? Was there anything you would say, Jason, that perhaps that Real Madrid team could have done better to maybe continue their success?
Well, I think, again, you know, I've just praised Mourinho. I'm just going to turn it around slightly. I mean, at most clubs he's been at, as you say, it's quite short term. It's normally sort of the third season when you start hearing of sort of dressing room unrest and such things. Now, you know, we don't really know how much of it's true or not, but there was certainly some things wrong there. And, you know, the team in that season, everything just came right just at the time. I think in order to sustain that sort of success, you've got to be incredibly lucky. You've got to have the foresight to sort of renew teams when they're doing well, not just when they're doing badly. And, you know, maybe that was potentially an issue. Maybe they could have, you know, had one or two other new players come in. You know, the Mourinho issue, I think, was the overriding one. And, you know, Florentino Perez ever since hasn't been backwards in coming forwards when he's wanted to get rid of managers. And, you know, I don't know whether I should say maybe even though Mourinho had just had that record breaking season when it started to fall apart, you know, maybe they could have acted sooner and perhaps, you know, had more sustained success. I don't know.
I'll be absolutely up for anyone sending into the Twitter or on the Facebook page, just commenting on this podcast article, just saying to any teams that you want to find a bit more about, we'll always be happy to discuss them and shed some light on perhaps some periods. And as I say, for the alternative folks as well, for any periods of Spanish football at the moment that needs some light to shed on them, we'll always be happy to do that on Eye on La Liga. And that draws an end to this episode. Thank you very much, Jason and Ewan, for hopping on this Monday afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
No problem. Absolute pleasure.
And we should be back early next week. Then, as I say, it's Real Madrid versus Sevilla on the Saturday afternoon, and then on Sunday evening, Villarreal versus Barcelona. It's a 5-man title race at the moment. How many of them will be left after another round of La Liga action? Find out next time on Eye on La Liga. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you later.